It's maybe the night that my dreams might let me know. Only stars are closer, only stars are closer.
Tell me what you gonna do to me. Confrontation ain't nothing new to me. You could bring a bullet, bring a sword, bring a morgue, but you can't bring the truth to me.
Alexa, play Kendrick Lamar and SZA.
Okay.
Maybe the night that my dreams might let me know. Only stars are closer.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
On this edition, it's a joy to have singer-songwriter David Roth on the program. We'll be talking about his newest CD, So Far So Good. We'll have conversation and share some of the music. I'm Richard Brendan, and it all begins right now. Hey, welcome to the program. I want to thank you for joining us today. I also want to give a shout out to our sponsors. They help make this program possible on this station. I want to thank Anthony Team Realty, also Still Point Family Chiropractic. Georgetown Natural Foods Market has been a sponsor as well. The Playful Soul in the Broad Ripple area and Natural Awakenings Magazine. I want to thank all of those good people and appreciate you again for joining us as well. David Roth is somebody who I have followed for some time. I've always appreciated his music. His lyrics are profound, I think. Also, he's got a real heart of compassion and service in this world as well. His newest CD, So Far So Good, is out right now. It's his 13th. And David's career as a singer, songwriter, recording artist, and enthusiastic instructor has taken his songs, experience, and expertise to a wide variety of venues in this and other countries full-time for more than 25 years. His work has found its way to Carnegie Hall, the United Nations, several Chicken Soup for the Soul books, the Kennedy Center, Peter, Paul, and Mary's 2014 retrospective Discovered, which was produced by Warner Brothers, and at NASA's Goddard Space Center. His song Rocket Science sailed on the space shuttle Atlantis in 2009. The Rising Up Singing and Rise Again sequel songbooks, and again the 13 CDs on Wind River and Stockfish, which is a Germany label. He's a winner of 4 Positive Music Awards, celebrating the best in empowering original music. David is also the 2015 Grace Note recipient for outstanding contribution to New Thought Music and the former artist in residence at New York's Omega Institute. We love Omega Institute on this program, and has also taught singing, songwriting, and performance at the Suahanaho Gathering, where he's coordinator of Contemporary Folk Week. It's a thrill to have him on. He's never been on the program before. And for those of you in the Indianapolis area, he's going to be doing a private house concert here in the Indianapolis area that Kate Miller is hosting. If you'd like more information on that, Kate Miller's phone number is 847-204-9350. That's 847-204-9350. The house concert begins at 7 p.m. on Monday, June 29th. It's a joy to have David join us. He's on the road again on tour. He's in Grand Rapids, and from there, he's joining us today. David Roth, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Richard.
You are fresh back from another tour to Ireland. How often have you gone over to that country?
Well, I went for the first time last year, Richard, and after that I was in love with both the country and the tour group that I work with over there. So now it's join David O. Roth, you know, to visit the Emerald Isle.
What opened up the door for that particular country for you?
Well, an old acquaintance of mine named John Smith up in Wisconsin is a great singer-songwriter. Has been going to Ireland for 10 years, and he hooked up with this tour company over there. Mm-hmm. The fellow who started the tour company passed away a couple of years ago, so John and his wife, Jo, took over the administration of what are now 20 to 25 tours every year, nine-day tours. And John put the word out to several of his friends that he was looking for anybody who could attract 25 people from their fan base for a really fun musical tour of the Emerald Isle. And so I put the word out to my email list last year, and within 8 days the trip was sold out. I'm doing 2 trips this year. My second one comes up in September, sold out. And I'm doing one in the middle of August in 2016, and that's 2/3 full already.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a neat thing. It's a beautiful country, and what I, among the many things that I resonate with it, is that music really helped pull a lot of people through the horrific events of the Irish famine in the mid-1800s.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. You are originally from Chicago.
I am.
And you grew up in Chicago. We talked earlier before we started taping. You also attended University of Illinois. But talk a little bit about what it was like growing up in the Chicago area, where you got your passion for music. At what age and when did that start?
Okay, well, I'm going to get right to the chase here, Richard. You know, I was extremely shy for the longest time. And as a senior in high school, my best friend was a very gregarious guitar player who, you know, was just really popular with everybody. And I thought maybe if I played a few chords on the guitar, I could help. This would help me overcome my shyness in a way. And so I tagged along with my friend, and we formed a little folk group with a couple other gals. And we were singing Peter, Paul, and Mary songs, The Fifth Dimension, The Mamas and the Papas. You know, it was... yeah, that's kind of what we were doing. And as a result of picking up the guitar, I saw, you know, how people just lit up, you know, when music was around, as if I needed to know that, because I joined the chorus in third grade, and that was another eye-opener for me. But picking up a guitar at age 18, you know, to really help me, you know, have something to lean on, literally and figuratively, was a great tool for more socialization, you know, for me.
You really grew up in a home, though, that I guess was very open and involved in some way in entertainment. I mean, your dad was a maitre d' at one of the fine restaurants in Chicago, and your mom was a big band singer.
She was a professional big band singer, had a record deal with Mercury, and had singles on all the jukeboxes in Chicago. Great singer. And my dad was the maitre d' at the Chez Paris, which was a nightclub. You know, it was the biggest cabaret in Chicago during the 40s and 50s, where all the top names in show business, when they played Chicago, this is where they played.
Yeah.
So because they both worked nights, many was the time for lack of child care that my sister and I got tagged along with one or the other. And most nights we went to the Chez Paris and, you know, did stuff like, you know, I'm sure I tried it. Tie Frank Sinatra's shoelaces together more than once underneath the tables, and, you know, stuff like the McGuire sisters, Sophie Tucker, you know, they were all there, Danny Kaye, Mel Torme, you name it. So that, you know, some would argue that's not the best environment for two little kids to grow up in, and I would be honest and say it was a mixed bag, a coin with two sides. You know, there were great things about it, and there were not so great things about it.
Yeah.
And so, ironically, to get back to your question, both my parents related to show business. Neither one of them really encouraged me to do this. In fact, my father, a Russian Jewish immigrant, had hoped I would become a lawyer or a doctor or anything but someone like a musician, truly, in all seriousness. And so he discouraged me at every opportunity. And it's hard for a son to deflect, you know, that kind of influence from his father, even from a distance, because my dad moved out when we were young.
Yeah.
So what happened was I always came back to the guitar when I ran out of trying everything else that, you know, they had preferred that I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in a way my dad was trying to maybe live his unfulfilled dreams through his only son.
Yeah. At what age were you when you started playing guitar?
I was 18, senior year in high school.
You know?
I went down to Sid Sherman's on Wabash Avenue, where all the music stores were in downtown Chicago, and I bought my Gibson B-25 for $200, which was a lot of money back then. I still have it.
How about that?
Yeah.
And where did the songwriting come from? Because your lyrics are beautiful, and you've had a very successful career writing a lot of great songs. Did you know at an early age you had a gift for writing, or...?
No, but I love language. I always have.
Mm.
And when I graduated the University of Illinois back in the mid-70s, my first job out of college, believe it or not, was as a copywriter for a tiny advertising agency in Anchorage, Alaska.
Mm.
My girlfriend at the time and I went up to visit some friends, and we loved Alaska so much. You know, being from Chicago, the highest mountain I ever saw was something called Mount Trashmore. That was literally... created by the Department of Sanitation. They made a big pile of garbage on the north side of Chicago so that when it snowed, we could go sledding. That was my experience of mountains. And then when I went up to Alaska and saw, you know, the beautiful mountain ranges up there, it blew me away. And so I looked in the want ads after, you know, in the summer of 1976 just to see what was going on. You know, this was back in the day when you had planned your whole life ahead of yourself with internships and Attract and all that.
Yeah.
And I saw a job that looked interesting enough to interview for, and boom, next thing I knew, I was hired as the chief copywriter for a small advertising agency. I got really sick of advertising in about 5 months, and my next job after that was as a corrections officer for the Department of Health and Social Services at Juvenile Jail.
Oh, my.
You know, one thing led to another, and I got to, play a part with the newly formed Alaska Repertory Theater, and then I met some other musicians, and I started playing more and more music up in Alaska, and that's where I got the bug. But the thing that turned, sorry for such a long answer, but I'm almost done, is that I took a backpacking trip around the world in 1980 with my best friend from fourth grade, and I landed in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And that began 10 years of living in New York when I thought I was only there to visit. On a Monday night, early on in the fall of 1980, I stumbled into a little cafe in Greenwich Village called the Cornelia Street Cafe, and there was the weekly songwriting group. And I met a man named Jack Hardy, I met Cliff Eberhardt, I met Rod McDonald, all these great Greenwich Village songwriters. Suzanne Vega was there, and later on Sean Colvin and John Gorkum, some great, great songwriters. And I fell in with that crowd, and I ended up spending 10 years in Manhattan, and every part-time job I could in order to support my music habit. And after about 6 or 7 years of writing a lot of really, bad songs, I started doing some personal work on my childhood about the stuff that I learned from my mom and dad, growing up with a single parent, not my mom.
Sure.
And once I started untangling this stuff, the songs really started making sense, the things I was writing with. And those first songs from my first CD, I now have 13, could well have been called a soundtrack from a dysfunctional family. But the album was called Rising in Love instead. And that had a lot of songs that reflected what I was learning in, my recovery, from the craziness that was our household. And we've all got stories, but my story was I was trying to understand why things were the way they were growing up. And I started doing that when I moved to New York, and it really clicked and helped. The paradox was, people, all of a sudden, when I started playing these much more deeply personal songs, would walk up to me at my shows and say, "Wow, how did you know?" Or, "It's just like you writing about me."
Yeah.
So the thing that clicked was discovering that the deeply personal can be incredibly universal. And I got on top of that wave, and that was 27 years ago. I haven't looked back.
That's beautiful. And by the way, congratulations on your newest CD, So Far, So Good. I love that title. It's like after 13, So Far, So Good.
Exactly. I'm a bona fide baby boomer, so every foot, one foot in front of the other, is like a victory celebration,
Yeah, I want to go back a lot to your journey here, but first let's go to another, a first track off this CD. The one I'd like to play right now, you mentioned something, it was your first album about rising in love, and also you shared just a little bit about what it was like growing up, and gosh, all the lessons we all learn. Every one of us is in a dysfunctional family from one degree or another. There's always things we can learn about, but there's a particular song that really struck my heart in a big way. It's so beautiful, and it's called Dream Come True, and it's a ballad for your wife, Tricia. And before we go to that, can you share a little bit about that song and maybe a little backstory or so about that, and we'll play it.
You know, Richard, it's a great question, and thanks for the comment. All my early songwriting, I really didn't follow form, structure, or format. But in 1999, I got an invitation to teach at a brand new songwriting camp in Woodstock, New York, called Summer Songs. So I hadn't really done much teaching to that point, but I'd gathered some life experience as a touring professional songwriter. And so I found that what was useful in my classes was to teach a structure that people could latch onto. If all inspiration failed, I say, okay, you write a verse, and then another verse, and then a chorus. And then you write another verse, and then a chorus. And then maybe you write a bridge, and then a verse, and a chorus. And those are 8 components of a given song. It's a very nice, tidy structure that they use in Nashville a lot. And I found it useful to teach people in a class I called Songwriting 101. All levels welcome, no experience preferred. So once I began teaching this format, I started writing that way, and I'd never really written, with verses and choruses, and I gained an understanding myself. So we come all the way full circle to Dream Come True. I was wanting to write a song for Tricia, and I started with the chorus. you know, and I wanted to sing something that was easy to remember, that was repetitive, that was melodic, and it said very simply what I wanted to say. And, you know, for me, this is a dream come true to have this time I have with you.
Yeah.
To have this time I have with you is a dream come true. I started there, and the verses kind of burgeoned off as I went back through the history of how we met, and, you know, how I could have been more observant than I was, but what we like to say to each other is, she ran around and chased me till I caught her.
I love that. And I love this song. We're bringing love to life today with singer-songwriter David Roth. We're also talking about his brand new CD. It's his 13th. So far, so good. And by the way, those of you in the Indianapolis area, David will be performing at a house concert here in Indy. I'll have more information about that towards the end of the interview. Those of you listening around the country, you can go to his website to find out if he's going to be in your neck of the woods, and that's DavidRothMusic.com. But right now, let's go to the song Dream Come True.
You walked into my life that day. I didn't see you coming my way. I was running around, going places with things to do. But the more that we were spending time, I was starting to go out of my mind, out of my mind, into my heart. For this I thank you. For me this is a dream come true, to have this time I have with you. To have this time I have with you is a dream come true. This is something that I never planned, something that I just didn't see. I was distracted, looking everywhere but here. So I didn't put up my walls. I was able to let you in, and in you came, and I'm a better person for it. For me this is a dream come true, to have this time I have with you. To have this time I have with you is a dream come true. This is a dream come true, to have this time I have with you. To have this time I have with you is a dream come true. Didn't do a lot of dreaming when I was a kid, because that bubble would always burst. That's what it always did. Then you walked into my life that day. Just look at all that's come my way, and the bubbles aren't bursting like they always used to do. And I know that I've a ways to go in all the things that I don't show, but I'm out of my mind, into my heart, for this I love you. For me this is a dream come true, to have this time I have with you. To have this time I have with you is a dream come true. For me this is a dream come true, to have this time I have with you. To have this time I have with you is a dream come true. dream come true. It's a dream come true.
Welcome back to the broadcast. I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing love to life today with singer-songwriter David Roth. David, I love the music that you're doing. The other thing I so appreciate about you is you seem to have a really heart for wanting to make a difference in the world. I mean, you're very passionate about teaching songwriting. You've done that at Omega and quite a few other places. But also, I read somewhere, I think it was on your website, and I saw some clips where you got involved, I think it's called Songs of Love, writing songs for children with catastrophic illnesses.
Yeah, I heard about this project that was started by a man who's now my friend, John Belzer. He started it in 1996, and I heard about it a couple of years later, and I immediately volunteered to get on board. And what songsoflove.org does is provides absolutely free a custom-made song for a family who has a child who is seriously ill. Some of the kids are terminal, but not all of them are. But the idea behind Songs of Love, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, is that these families receive something absolutely free that may give them some stress reduction and offer them some support. And I'm one of those people who believe that, you know, what you think about something can affect the circumstance around it. So these custom-made songs are provided absolutely free to these families. I got on board, you know, in 1998, and I've been writing them ever since. It's a thing that I do for my seva or my service, mm-hmm. never taking a penny for it. And I just really believe that these families love having something like this at the most stressful point in their life, you know, when one of their family members is, you know, facing grave situation.
Yeah, you mentioned,
something I'd love to do.
You mentioned my service. Not all singer-songwriters have that desire necessarily to want to serve or to be interested in various causes and such. Where did that come for you, that heart of compassion that I feel actually in your music too?
I think a couple places, but you know, the most obvious one that comes to mind is my folk singing tradition. You know, I've always been a big fan of Pete Seeger, and before him Woody Guthrie, and then, you know, Bob Dylan. But you know, great writers, you know, I often talk about what I call the Mount Rushmore of folk music. You know, I ask people, who do you think the four people would be on the Mount Rushmore of folk music? And it's a purely subjective question, but I would put Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, and Bob Dylan on there. Mm. The fourth one is open to interpretation, but I would stick Joni Mitchell on that mountain for me. But, you know, coming from the tradition, especially Pete's, and of course I love Phil Oakes too, was that a song could make a difference. You know, and the thing that I'm most passionate about in my work is the song. So why should I sit here and, you know, twiddle my thumbs and be happy with how things are going for me when maybe I can use this, you know, to lift somebody else up, and that gives me great satisfaction. Mm. So that's one thing. The other thing is, well, just everything that's going on in the world, you know. The evening news is a horror show these days, and I think it's my experience anyway that people are thirsty for something to uplift in the face of all this relentless negativity going on. It goes all the way from economic diversity to political polarization to difference in spiritual belief to racism, you name it. It's all out there. So my goal in any given concert event or even with a CD would be that people feel more connected in some way and feel there's hope for more connection, rather than dig in and feel more polarized than they were before.
And
in a way, it's another way of saying that it's agreeing to disagree, but finding the common ground. You know, if you differ on one thing that I believe, that's not a deal breaker for all the other things that we might agree on.
Mm-hmm. And there's something powerful, I think, about music, the lyrics, the tune, how it can also bring a message across, but in such a positive way. And I love to see artists such as yourself and so many others, and a lot of young ones coming up too, that are really, truly what I would call social change artists in the work that they do.
I think social media has contributed to this, Richard, because it's so easy to get, you know, I could write a song after this conversation, and it could be all the way around the world in a half hour from now. you know, that's a big game changer, you know. One of the downside is that there's such an ocean of music, you know, out there. It's hard to find the things you gravitate towards, and I wouldn't necessarily want to be a younger person starting out in the music world today, because let's say you and I are in our 20s and 30s, and we go to a club or a concert and we hear something that we really like, we'll have it downloaded on our cell phone before we get to our car in the parking lot for free.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Wow, that was, I had Beth Nielsen Chapman on maybe about 3-4 weeks ago, and that was something she really, really was passionate about, how things have changed for songwriters back when she first started, that it's harder to make a living doing that for all kinds of reasons like that and others.
Well, I want to tell you something. Yeah, Richard, I believe that when we get together for live music events, especially folk, and that's the genre that I'm in, some call it new thought, whatever, you know, I believe we represent the last bastion of the attention span in our culture.
Yeah.
You know, when we get together in person. So I have strung together a career. You know, I'm not a famous person by any means, but I have been working long and steady with no end in sight, and I have my little following all around the country and a few other countries, too, who are still showing up because they see the value in not only supporting the musician, you know, by buying their CDs, but by getting together, you know, so we can have a dialogue, you know. I often describe my concert as town meetings with a soundtrack, you know, because I like to have interaction, you know, with the audience and just kind of provide a forum so that there isn't that big distance between the performer and the audience, but rather, hey, we're in this together kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, I agree with you, and I think that's a lost art these days, the lyrics. Back when I grew up, I mean, we had the James Taylors and Carole Kings and Dan Fogelbergs and people like that, and now we're in a Justin Bieber kind of an age these days. I notice you're choking. But hopefully the appreciation of the lyrics is coming back. You wrote a song that I really enjoyed about one of my heroes. I personally love all the Nobel Peace Laureates, because to me, they're all doing such amazing, beautiful work out there. I've only had a couple on this show, but it was such a thrill. But we're talking about Wangari Maathai, the first African woman, actually, to win the Nobel Peace Prize. Why did you write a song about what she was about? The song is called Women Planting Trees.
Someone alerted me to her story. It might have been in an email. I don't exactly remember. And I went and I read about what she was doing, and you know, I was blown away because she passed away 2 or 3 years ago from cancer in her early 70s. But here was a simple woman from Kenya who looked around and said, what can I do that makes a difference? And so the simple thing she did was she planted one tree because her country was being, you know, deforested right before her very eyes. And, you know, 30 years later, that turned into 30 million new trees. And I'm glad she got a Nobel Peace Prize. I'm glad that she was brought to my attention halfway around the world. You know, not too long ago, Pete Seeger was up for a Nobel Peace Prize, too, but they gave that one to Al Gore, you know, for showing a slideshow about the environment.
I remember that, yes.
Yeah, you know, and, you know, I was all for Pete on that one. And if a guy like Pete couldn't win one, well, then I'll still throw my weight to the Wangari Maathais of the world. But I love it when somebody can figure out something to make a big difference. And she, you know, she did something quite amazing.
One of the things I loved about Pete Seeger was that he was so authentic and he was so on message. I mean, for a guy to even be boycotted from Hootenanny years ago, that said a lot. So you couldn't help but admire that precious soul.
Well, he refused to speak out during McCarthyism, you know. He refused to name names, and just stood by his beliefs, and whatever he believed, whether you liked it or not, you know, he walked the walk and sang the song.
He did.
So great inspiration to me.
Yeah. It's a joy to have singer-songwriter David Roth on today's program. We're talking about his newest CD, So Far So Good, also the tour that he's on right now across this country. He'll be heading back to Ireland a little bit later, also this year, I believe. But he's also going to be coming to Indianapolis on Monday, the 29th, and we're looking forward to that as well. But first, we're going to go to another song off his CD, So Far So Good. This one is called Women Planting Trees, and we'll have much more of the conversation on the other side. Thank you.
30 years ago in the country of Kenya. They were cutting down trees till very few remained. The topsoil disappeared. The land became a desert. Life was hard to sustain. The women of the villages would go in search of firewood. Branches were scarce in this ocean of sand. One woman, Wangari, saw this taking place. She said, "We must take care of our land." So she planted a tree and planted another, in hopes she might see a little change begin. She also saw before her a giant undertaking. So she organized her friends. They were part of the movement, recovering their land, bringing back the roots of Kenya from the sand. They were moving to make their homeland green, women planting trees. With a bag of seeds, she showed her neighbors about planting more trees, an act for which she paid them a small sum. A giant leap. Soon Wangari organized the women of the Kenya nation. They were part of the movement, recovering their land, bringing back the roots of Kenya from the sand. They were moving to make their homeland green, women planting trees. And something else was happening, empowerment and strength. This was threatening to the men who made the rules. Wangari and her women friends were making real changes, so the policemen came and broke their tools. But they never broke her spirit, even though they tried. They accused her of subversion. They arrested her for crimes. She carried on. In spite of them, kept on planting trees, saplings of pride and possibility. They were part of the movement, recovering their land, bringing back the roots of Kenya from the sand. They were moving to make their homeland green, women planting trees. Later, in the country of Kenya, 30 million new trees under African skies. Wangari is the first African woman to win the Nobel Peace Prize. She began the movement, recovering her land, bringing back the roots of Kenya from the sand. She was moving to make homeland green, women planting trees. They are part of the movement, recovering their land, bringing back the roots of Kenya from the sand. They are moving to make their homeland green, women planting trees. Women planting.
back to the program. It's a joy to have David Roth with me today. David's a singer, songwriter. This is his 13th CD. So far, so good. David, your passion, your background is in folk, but also you've become pretty popular in the New Thought community. And when did that start? You're having people like Jack Canfield and so many others who are singing your praises. Congratulations on that. And by the way, I think you just won an award this year.
The Association of Unity Churches gave me their Grace Note Award. Given out once a year to an individual for what they call outstanding contribution to New Thought music.
Yeah, and you're also a former artist in residence at New York's Omega Institute. When did that bridge begin to happen?
You know, I mentioned living in New York during the 1980s, and just when I was at the turning point, Richard, of deciding whether to stay in New York for the long haul or go seek new adventures, I got a call from the program director there. David Darling, the great cellist from the Paul Winter Concert, had been the artist in residence there for many years, and he was going on a conducting tour of Europe that summer of 1990, I believe it was. Mm. And the program director there had heard me do 6 songs one night in the main hall as part of a slideshow. It was my first time ever there, and she called me up and she said, "You know, David, I don't know why I'm calling you first, but I've got this job here called, you know, the Bard or the Musician in Residence, and David Darling has been doing it for years, but he's not going to be available this summer, and someone told me to call you up and see if this is something you'd be interested in." And she described it to me. I'd be playing music for all the workshops from Ram Dass to Thich Nhat Hanh to right on down the line, and I was living in my fifth floor walk up in New York at the time with a rotary phone with a curly cord, and she said, "Well, let me think." I said, "Let me think about this," and I hung up the phone and I said, "Oh my God, that's a dream job." I called her back immediately. I said, "Please don't call anybody else. I would love to do this." So that's what got me started at Omega, and I was there, you know, doing one thing or another for all of the 90s and early into the 2000s. I started off as a musician in residence, then I was doing catalog courses. My favorite one was singing for shy people, and it was helping people overcome their fear of singing in 5 days, and it was really fun.
Yeah.
Well, during that time, I'll answer your question. Excuse me for cutting you off. My mom was attending a New Thought church in Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
It was called the Culver City Church of Religious Science. Now these are called Centers for Spiritual Living.
Yes.
It was called Religious Science back then. And she kept telling the minister how talented her beautiful son was. And in spite of that, they actually invited me to come sing one Sunday. So I did, that Sunday changed my life. You know, I got a raving endorsement from the minister, and I met another woman who introduced me to a man who took me to all the New Thought churches on a big Florida tour, Mark Tucker of Awakening Heart Productions.
Yeah.
And that was probably about 400 churches ago, which is not bad for a nice Jewish boy from Chicago.
Not bad at all. Not bad at all. So you've got several different genres. You've got the New Thought, you've got pure folk, and now Ireland loves you. What is left for you to conquer, David Roth?
Well, it's a big world, you know, but for those of you who know what mastermind courses are, I know some people sit around in mastermind groups and try to figure out what the next strategy is. I'm going to give you my simple formula, and this is what I have followed for 27 years and more. I'm just looking for the next good song.
Yeah.
I'm looking to write the next good song, and these songs some of them have taken wings, and they've given me a ride to places I never could have dreamed I'd go to. So that's my big mission statement. That's my big master plan, the next good song. That's my hope.
You've written so many songs over the years. Do you ever have a drought or a writer's block at all?
You know, I do run into times of blockage, but when I really sit down and think about it, it's more that I haven't created time to write. Mm-hmm. I find that I'm most fluid when I'm more disciplined and I set aside a little time to write, even if I don't know what I'm going to write about. But if I let it go for a while, like when a new album comes out like this one, I go, "Oh, I'm going to take a breath now. I've got the new music in the world," and, you know, I kind of back off a little bit. But then when I'm playing so many shows, and I play a lot of shows in a year, you know, I want to keep it interesting, and especially when I come back to some sponsors year after year, I keep track of my shows, and I want to make sure that I'm giving something new every time I come, as well as revisiting some of the older stuff, which is why people come back to hear me in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say it's writer's block. It's just I have to remind myself to make time to be creative.
Yeah. Yeah, I see you're going to be in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. What a great place that is.
Love it.
Yeah. How do you keep your energy up, by the way, with all the traveling and performances that you do?
Well, you know, I'm, like I that I'm a baby boomer, and I've had a few health crises in the last 10 years. Without going down, without making this, you know, an organ recital, I'll tell you that I had thyroid cancer, I had Lyme's disease, I had bilateral pulmonary embolisms, I had a torn Achilles tendon, and each one of these larger and larger wake-up calls has reminded me that I have to do some more exercise. So, you know, nowadays, just about every day, I run 2 or 3 miles in the morning. I try to watch what I eat, and I follow the 4-point health plan still given to me by my naturopathic doctor in Seattle for optimal health. I make sure I get enough sleep. I make sure I get enough water. I make sure I'm eating, you know, good quality foods with a little straying here and there. Hey, sure. I'm a folk singer. I'm in a coffee house. They have good stuff there, you know. And the fourth thing is, you know, supplements. I take some vitamin supplements, you know, for the things that might be lacking in my diet. And with things like that, you know, but really mostly now I'm focusing on making sure I get exercise because the body changes, and I want to keep my circulation going and my heart ticking as much as possible. So Absolutely. You'll find me out there running in the rain like I was today in Michigan.
If people want to visit you online, they can go to davidrothmusic.com. You're going to be at Kate Miller's place Monday night. We'll get the information and her contact phone number at the end of the interview here. And, David, I want to thank you for sharing your time with us today. I want to thank you for the light that you're shining in this world and the great music you continue to create. The last song we're going to play is We Are the Stuff of Stars. I love that song.
Thank you. I love that song, too.
Can you share a little bit about that, and then we'll go to it?
Well, I have 2 co-writers on this song, and that's why I can say I love it. That's not just saying I love my song. I wrote this with Lisa Ashman from Nashville and J.D. Martin from Colorado. We were at the Positive Music Festival 2 or 3 years ago, just on a lunch break, you know, where musicians who are looking for better things in the world all gather.
Yeah.
And we have workshops and song swaps and all kinds of things like that. And I saw these 2 beautiful songwriters walking around the conference hotel, and I grabbed them and I said, hey, you know, how would you guys think about writing a song right now together? And J.D., this beautiful man from Colorado, was eating a sandwich, and he kind of thought for a minute. He says, well, okay. And Lisa said, yeah, I'd love to. And then later on, J.D. would say, I can't believe I even paused when the two of you asked me to write a song with you. Because what was I thinking? And so Lisa had the line, we are the stuff of stars, and I just totally ran with that and filled in a lot of the lyrics and chords, and JD is a brilliant, brilliant piano player, and he's the one playing piano on the album. And I'll try to make this story short, too. I wasn't even going to put this on the album, Richard, but I was taking a jog in Florida this past January as the album was about to be mastered. And when I put on my cardio trainer app, for some reason, it also clicks on my tape-to-talk voice memo feature on my phone. So while I'm running, I keep hearing these old recordings. I don't know why they kick on, and I heard the writing session for We Are the Stuff of Stars during this 45-minute run that I did that day. And I said, I've got to revisit this song, and I've got to see if I can put it on this album. So I wrote JD a letter. I said, remember that song we wrote? Gosh, this is the universe telling me I need to do something with this. And can you put a piano part together? So we Skyped, you know, face-to-face on a computer, and I talked J.D. through a piano part, and he sent this beautiful piano part to me. I sang it. So he made the piano part in Colorado. I sang the piano, the vocal, on Cape Cod, Massachusetts, and I sent both audio files to Woodstock, New York, where my album was being mastered, and my brilliant engineer, Mark Dan, put them together, and this ended up being the final cut on the CD.
I'm glad it made the cut. David, it's been a joy to have you on the program. I look forward to meeting you, and best wishes on your performance tonight in Grand Rapids.
Thanks, Richard. It's a pleasure, and anytime you want to do this again, yeah, obviously there's always lots to talk about, so I appreciate the time. Thank you for inviting me.
Once again, if you want to visit David online, you can go to davidrothmusic.com, and those of you listening in the Indianapolis area, if you'd like to listen to him and meet him in person, you can do that tomorrow night, June 29th, Monday night. Concert starts at 7 p.m. The doors open up at 6. Contact Kate Miller for location information. The number to call is 847-204-9350. That number, 847-204-9350, for a special house concert here in Indianapolis for David Roth. And now, let's go to that beautiful song, We Are the Stuff of Stars.
We're the stuff that stars are made of, dust and light. What appears to be a vacuum is not an endless night. All the darkness in between doesn't mean a blessed thing. We're the stuff that stars are made of. We are the stuff of stars. We're the stuff that stars are made of. Hopes and dreams. What appears as challenging may not be all it seems. All the doubt and all the fear no longer has a home in here. We're the stuff that stars are made of. We are the stuff of stars. Gravity may pull you down with all its might. Never underestimate the power and speed of light. We're the stuff that stars are made of, sparks and spheres. What appears as endless void is cleansed away by tears. Every wound and every scar can't extinguish who we are. We're the stuff that stars are made of. We are the stuff of stars.
Richard Brendan, Bringing Love to Life, is underwritten in part by Anthony Team Realty, an affiliate of F.C. Tucker Company. Jim Anthony and his team have the resources to assist you in buying or selling a home and have a full slate of real estate services in Indianapolis, Central Indiana, and beyond. To contact Jim and the Anthony team, their phone number is 317-844-4200 or online at anthonyteamrealty.com.
Wellness is an active process of becoming more aware and making better choices that move you in the direction of a more successful life. Choices to eat well, move well, and think well enable your body to live well. When your spine is aligned properly, your brain and body are connected. Stillpoint Family Chiropractic is a family wellness center where we focus on your lifestyle and the impact it has on your spine, brain, and your life. Find us on Facebook at Stillpoint Family Chiropractic, or our phone number is 317-863-0365.
This program is sponsored in part by The Playful Soul, an event venue, yoga studio, art gallery, and boutique for your spirit. At The Playful Soul, you'll find books, candles, essential oils, jewelry, clothing, music, and meditation aids. Located in the Broad Ripple Village, they also offer meditation groups, dream groups, and book conversations. The address is 6516 North Ferguson. Their website is theplayfulsoul.com.
Before we go to a closing song off David's album, So Far, So Good, I'd like to share with you some keys that I would consider are gateways to an inspired life. I find that more and more people are really wanting that in their life these days. Number one, the main work of every human being is inner work. I mean, each day, do something significant to deepen yourself. To have more of the life that you truly want, you must first become more of who you truly are. Number two, see your life as a fantastic growth school. Everything that you experience, both good and challenging, has come to you to teach you the lesson that you most needed to learn at that particular stage of your evolution as a person. Understand this truth and keep asking yourself, what opportunity does this person or situation represent in terms of your personal growth? This is a great source of inner peace. Three, be true to yourself. The best life is the authentic life. Never betray yourself. take off your social mask and have the personal bravery to present the real you to the world. The world will be richer for it. I remember Stephen Covey coming on the program many years ago, the great author of Seven Habits of Highly Successful People, and he just wrote his newest book, and that was The Eighth Habit. And that eighth habit was very simple. It was one thick book over one habit, and the habit was to find our voice and inspire others to find theirs. It's amazing how many people are living knockoff lives, like so many of the knockoff neighborhoods that we witness in suburbia. But the greatest gift you can give yourself, in fact, I think it's a sign of loving yourself, is being true to who you are. The way you look, the way you think, your thought process, that's uniquely you. It was one of my guests, Bishop John Selby Spong, who came on the program and said, Jesus came to earth to teach us three things, and that is to risk for love, dare to live, and have the courage to be who you are. So be true to yourself. That is key. Number four, remember that we collect what we project. Our outer lives are nothing more than a mirror image of our inner lives. You pour light on your dark side, and then become aware of the false assumptions, all the limiting beliefs that are holding you back, and the fears that are keeping you small, and your exterior world will change. Guaranteed. Number five, we tend to see the world not as it is, but as we are. Know this, that the truth in any given circumstance is filtered through your personal context. Clean up your glass lens, and you'll clean up your life. And only then will you see the truth. And number six, live in your heart, because its wisdom never lies. So many people are living their lives in their head. It's time to get out of your head and into your heart. Follow the quiet promptings of your heart, and you'll be led in the direction of your destiny. And in seven, stand in the curiosity of your life, in surrendering control, always having to be control of everything in your life, learning to let that go, you'll create a space for possibilities to enter and for treasures to flow. That's something that so many people are learning now more than ever these days. And then eight, care for yourself. Do something each day to nurture your mind, body, and spirit. These are essential acts of self-respect and self-love. And remember this, you are enough, you have enough, and you do enough. Before we go to a final song from David Ross' album, let's hear a word from more of our sponsors.
This WICR program is underwritten in part by Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. They carry organic produce and bulk body care products such as shampoo, lotion, soaps, and shower gel. Their kitchen serves soup, sandwiches, hot entrees, and carryout food. Plus, they have a juice bar. Georgetown Natural Foods Market, located at 4375 Georgetown Road on Indy's west side. Their website is georgetownmarket.com.
Richard Brendan, Bringing Love to Life, is underwritten in part by Natural Awakenings magazine. Each month, Natural Awakenings takes a practical look at the latest natural approaches to nutrition, fitness, creative expression, personal growth, and sustainable living. The magazine also covers the products and services that support a healthy lifestyle. Natural Awakenings magazine is a free publication and can be found at most healthy lifestyle outlets. Their website is awakenindy.com.
And now in closing, we're going to play a final song from David's album. This is called Goodness is More Than a Dream. It's a guitar ballad about a Florida woman caught shoplifting and what the arresting female officer did to change the entire paradigm.
Jessica Ramos, a single young mother, was struggling to feed her three kids. She went to the market without any money. Family had fallen on hardship. She put what she needed right into her shopping cart.
didn't take one extra thing. Some milk and some meatballs, some hamburger helper, canned corn, peaches, and chicken wings. Her kids were so hungry, she had to do something. Never had planned to be poor. She didn't know who else she could turn to. Roll that cart right out the door. That's where a policewoman saw Jessica Robles, caught her red-handed in this. I can't go to jail, Jessica sobbed and she pleaded. Who'll take care of my kids? Officer Thomas saw a much bigger picture, much larger than milk or than bread. Arresting this mother would solve nobody's problems. She had a notion instead. She pulled out her wallet, took out 620s, paid for those groceries in full. When others got wind of the story, more money came pouring in for Jessica Robles. A woman named Mayra gave $200. She said, I've been right where she is. One of the local businesses kicked in with 500 more for her kids. When the story appeared on the late evening news, someone watching offered Jessica a job. To say she was grateful would not scratch the surface. Went down to her very last straw. The world may seem random, bad things may happen. Without rhyme or reason, it seems. But now and again, something stunning reminds me that goodness is more than a dream.
That's today's program. Our website is richardbrendan.com. For senior producer Lisa Morrison, engineer Joe Bainline, and production coordinator Kate Miller, I'm Richard Brendan. We're bringing love to life, one broadcast at a time.
Grab a hold of Big Breakfast flavor at Hardee's. Try two breakfast sliders for just $2.99. Get Applewood smoked bacon or freshly grilled sausage with fluffy eggs and golden melty cheese, all on a toasty little bun. Good morning, start at Hardee's. Available now for a limited time at participating restaurants. Tax not included.
When it comes to safety, nothing is more important than your vehicle's brakes. If it's hard to stop or you hear squealing or grinding noises during braking, stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. You'll find the brake parts you need from trusted brands like Brake Best and Brake Best Select at everyday low prices. Play it safe with brakes from O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.